Chapter 11. I must apologize for the beginning of that last chapter. My goal is to write a completely frivolous book. For if I actually say anything important, I run the risk of making people worship or respect me even more. Therefore, I should ask that you will do me a favor. Get out some scissors and cut out the next few paragraphs in this chapter. Paste them over the beginning of the last chapter, hiding it away so that you never have to read its pretentious editorializing again. Ready? Go. Once there was a bunny. This bunny had a birthday party. It was the bestest birthday party ever, because that was the day the bunny got a bazooka. The bunny loved his bazooka. He blew up all sorts of things on the farm. He blew up the stable of Henrietta, the horse. He blew up the pen of Pugsley the pig. He blew up the coop of Chuck the chicken. "I have the bestest bazooka ever," the bunny said. Then the farm friends proceeded to beat him senseless and steal his bazooka. It was the happiest day of his life. The end. Epilogue. Pugsley the pig, now without a pen, was quite annoyed. When none of the others were looking, he stole the bazooka. He tied a bandana on his head and swore vengeance for what had been done to him.
"From this day on," he whispered, raising the bazooka, "I shall be known as Hambo."
There. I feel much better. Now we can return to the story, refreshed and confident that you're reading the right kind of book. I cringed, tense, looking down at my foot on the tripwire. "So," I said, glancing at Bastille, "is it going to do any..." Yak! At that moment, panels on the ceiling fell away, dumping what seemed like 1,000 buckets full of dark, sticky sludge on us. I tried to move out of the way, but I was far too slow. Even Bastille, with her enhanced Kristen speed, couldn't dodge fast enough. It hit, covering us in a tar-like substance. I tried to yell, but the sound came out in a gurgle as the thick, black material got into my mouth. It had a rather unpleasant flavor, kind of like a cross between bananas and tar. Heavy on the tar. I struggled and was frustrated to feel the goop suddenly harden. I was frozen in place, one eye open, the other closed, my mouth filled with hard tar, my nose, fortunately, unplugged. "Great," Bastille said. I could just barely see her, covered in hardened sludge a short distance away, stuck in a running posture. She'd had the sense to shade her face so her eyes and mouth were uncovered, but her arm was glued to her forehead. "Kaz, you stuck too?"
"Yeah," said a muffled voice. "I tried to lose myself, but it didn't work. We were already lost."
"Alcatraz?" Bastille asked. I made a grumbling noise through my nose.
"He looks all right," Kaz said. "He isn't going to be waxing eloquent anytime soon, though."
"As if he ever does," Bastille said, struggling. "Enough of this," I thought in annoyance, releasing my talent into the goop. Nothing happened. There are, unfortunately, plenty of things that are resistant to Smedry talents. Several curators glided across the floor to us, looking quite pleased with themselves.
"We can provide a book for you that will explain how to get out," one said. "You will find it very interesting," said another.
"Shatter yourselves," Bastille snapped, grunting again as she tried to get free.
Nothing moved but her chin.
"What kind of offer is that?" Kaz demanded. "We wouldn't be able to read the book like this."
"We'd be happy to read it to you," one of the others said, "so that you would understand how to escape in the moments before your soul was taken. Plus," another whispered, "you would have all of eternity to study. Surely that must appeal to you, a scholar, an eternity with a knowledge of the library, all at your fingertips."
"Never able to leave?" Kaz said. "Trapped forever in this pit? Forced to entice others into the trap?"
"Your brother thought the trade worthwhile," one of them whispered.
"What?" I thought. "Father?"
"You lie," Kaz said. "Attica would never fall for one of your tricks." "We didn't have to trick him," another whispered, floating close to me. "He came quite willingly. All for a book. A single. special book? What book?
Bastille asked. The curators fell silent, skull heads smiling.
Will you trade your soul for that knowledge?
Bastille began to swear, struggling harder. The curators moved around her, speaking in a language that my lenses told me was classical Greek.
If I could just get to my Windstormer's lenses, I thought, perhaps I could blow some of this goop away. I couldn't even wiggle my fingers, though, let alone reach into my jacket. If only my talent would work.
I focused, drawing forth all of the power I could, and released it into the goop. Yet it refused to break or yield. Something occurred to me. The goop was resistant, but what about the floor beneath me? I gathered my talent again, then released it downward. I strained, feeling the pulsings of energy run through my body and out my feet. I felt my shoes unravel, the rubber slipping free, the canvas falling apart. I felt the rock beneath my heels crumble. But that was ultimately useless, since my body was still held tightly by the goop. The ground fell away beneath me. But I didn't fall with it. The curator closest to me turned.
Are you certain you don't want that book on talents, young oculator? Perhaps it would help you free yourself.
Focus, I thought as the rest of the curators continued to torment Bastille.
They said that there's a book on how to escape this goop. Well, that means there's a way out.
I continued struggling, but that was obviously useless. If it was possible to break free with just muscles, then Bastille would manage to long before I did. So instead, I focused on the goop itself. What could I determine about it? The stuff in my mouth seemed slightly softer than the stuff around the outside of my body. Was there a reason for that? Spit, perhaps? Maybe the goop didn't harden when it was wet. I began to drool out some saliva, trying to get it on the goop. Spit began to seep out of the top of my mouth and down the front of the glop of goop on my face.
Alcatraz?
Bastille asked. You all right? I tried to grunt in a reassuring way, but then I found that it's very hard to grunt eloquently when you're spitting. After several minutes, I came to the unpleasant conclusion that the goop didn't dissolve in saliva. Unfortunately, now I was not only being held tightly by a sheet of hardened black tar, I'd also drooled all over the front of my shirt.
Getting frustrated?
A curator asked, hovering around me in a circle.
How long will you struggle? You need not be able to speak. Simply blink 3 times if you want to trade your soul for the way out.
I kept my eyes wide open. They began to dry out, which was appropriately ironic, considering the state of my shirt. The curator looked disappointed, but continued to hover.
Why bother with all of the cajoling? I wondered. We're in their power. Why not kill us? Why not just take our souls from us by force?
That thought made me pause. If they hadn't done that already, then it probably meant that they couldn't. Which seemed to imply that they were bound by some kind of laws or a code or something. My jaw was getting tired. It seemed an odd thing to think of. I was being held tightly in all places, and I was worried about my jaw? Was that because it wasn't being held as tightly as the rest? But I'd already determined that. The goop in my mouth wasn't as hard. So, uncertain what else to do, I bit down. Hard. Surprisingly, my teeth cut through the stuff, and the chunk of goop came off in my mouth. Suddenly, the entire blanket of it, the stuff covering me, Bastille, Kaz, and the floor, shuddered.
What?
I thought. The stuff I'd bitten off immediately became liquid again, and I nearly choked as I was forced to swallow it. The piece in front of my face withdrew slightly after the bite, and I could still see it wiggling, almost as if The entire blob were alive. I shivered. Yet I didn't have many options. Wiggling my head a bit, it was looser now that the stuff had retreated from my face, I snapped forward and took another bite out of the stuff. It shook and pulled farther away. I leaned over and, spitting out the chunk of tarry, banana-ish stuff, I took another bite. The blanket of goop pulled back from me completely, like a shy dog that had been kicked. The metaphor seemed apt, and so I kicked it. The blob shook, then retreated off of Bastille and Kaz, fleeing away down the corridor. I spit a few times, grimacing at the taste. Then I eyed the curators. "Perhaps you should train your traps a little better." They did not look pleased. Kaz, on the other hand, was smiling widely.
"Kid, I'm almost tempted to make you an official short person."
"Thanks," I said.
"Course we'd have to cut your legs off at the knees," Kaz said, "but that would be a small price to pay."
He winked at me. I'm pretty sure that was a joke. I shook my head, stepping out of the rubbled pocket I'd made in the floor with my talent. My shoes barely hung to my feet, and I kicked them off, forced to walk barefoot. Still, I'd gotten us free. I turned, smiling, to Bastille.
"Well, I believe that makes two traps I've saved you from."
"Oh," she said, "and are we going to start a count of the ones you got me into as well? Who was it who stepped on the tripwire again?" I flushed.
"Any one of us could have tripped it, Bastille," Kaz said, walking up to us. "As fun as that was, I'm starting to think it might be a good idea if we didn't hit any more of those. We need to go more carefully."
"You think?" Bastille asked flatly. "The trick is, I can't scout ahead, not if you're leading us with your talent."
"We'll just have to be more cautious then," Kaz said.
I looked down at the tripwire, thinking about the danger. We couldn't afford to stumble into every one of those we came across. Who knew if we'd be able to think of a way out of the next one? "Kaz, Bastille, wait a second." I reached into a pocket, pulling out my lenses. I left the Windstormer's lenses alone and put on the Discerner's lenses, the ones that Grandpa Smedry had left for me up above. Immediately, everything around me began to give off a faint glow, indicating how old it was. I looked down. Sure enough, the tripwire glowed far lighter than the stones or the scrolls around it. It was newer than the original construction of the building. I looked up, smiling. "I think I've found a way around the problem."
"Are those Discerner's lenses?" Bastille asked.
I nodded.
"Where in the sands did you get a pair of those?"
"Grandpa Smedry left them for me," I said. "Outside, along with a note." I frowned, glancing at the curators.
"Speaking of which, didn't you say you'd return the writings you took from me?"
The creatures glanced at one another. Then, one of them approached, betraying a sullen look. The apparition bent down and set some things on the ground. Copies of my tags, the wrapper that had been taken from me, and Grandpa Smedry's note. There were also copies of the money I'd given them. They were perfect replicas, except that they were colorless. "Great," I thought. "But I probably didn't need that anymore anyway." I stooped down to gather the things, which all glowed brightly, since they all had been created brand new. Bastille took the note, looking it over with a frown, then handed it to Kaz.
"So your father really is down here somewhere," she said.
"Looks like it."
"And the curators claim he already gave up his soul."
I fell silent.
"They gave back my papers when I asked," I thought, "and they keep trying to get us to agree to give away our souls, but don't take them by force. They're bound by rules. I should have realized this earlier. You see, everything is bound by rules. Society has laws, as does nature, as do people. Many of society's rules have to do with expectations, which I'll talk about later, and therefore can be bent. A lot of nature's laws, however, are hard set. There are many more of these than you might expect. In fact, There are even natural laws relating to this book, my favorite of which is known as the Law of Pure Awesomeness. This law, of course, simply states that any book I write is awesome. I'm sorry, but it's a fact. Who am I to argue with science? You, I said, looking toward a curator. Your kind have laws, don't they? The curator paused.
Yes, it finally said. Do you want to read them? I can give you a book that explains them in detail.
No, I said. No, I don't want to read about them. I want to hear about them. From you. The curator frowned.
You have to tell me, don't you?
I said, smiling.
It is my privilege to do so, the creature said.
Then it began to smile.
Of course, I am going to have to tell them to you in their original language.
We are impressed that you speak ancient Greek, another said.
You are one who came to us prepared. There are few that do that these days.
But, another whispered,
we doubt that you know how to speak Elder Faxdarian. Speak ancient Greek, I thought, confused.
Then it occurred to me.
They don't know about my translator's lenses. They think that because I understood them back at the beginning, I must have known the language.
Oh, I don't know about that, I said casually, swapping my discerner's lenses back for my translator's lenses. Try me.
Ha! One of them said in a very odd, strange language.
It consisted mostly of spitting sounds. Like always, the translator's lenses let me hear the words in English.
The fool thinks he knows our language.
Give him the rules, then,
another hissed.
First rule, said the one in front of me. If anyone enters our domain bearing writing, we may separate them from their group and demand the writing be given to us. If they resist, we may take the writing, but we must return copies. We may hold these back for 1 hour, but, unless the items are requested, can keep them from then on.
Second rule. We may take the souls of those who enter, but we can do so only if the souls are offered freely and lawfully. Souls may be coerced, but not forced. Third rule. We may accept or reject a person's request for a soul contract. Once the contract is signed, we must provide the specific book requested, then refrain from taking their soul for the time specified in the contract. This time may not be longer than 10 hours. If a person takes a book off its shelf without a contract, we may take their soul after 10 seconds.
I shivered. 10 seconds or 10 hours, it didn't seem to matter much. You still lost your soul.
Of course, in my experience, there's really only one book in all of the world that is worth your soul to read. And you're holding it right now.
I accept credit cards. Fourth rule, the curator continued, we cannot directly harm those who enter.
Hence the traps, I thought. Technically, when we trip those, we harm ourselves. I continued to stare blankly ahead, acting as if I didn't understand a word they were saying.
Fifth rule, when a person gives up their soul and becomes a curator, we must deliver up their possessions to their kin should a member of the family come to the library and request such possessions. Sixth rule, and most important of them all, we are the protectors of knowledge and truth. We cannot lie if asked a direct question.
The curator fell silent.
That it? I asked.
If you've never seen a group of undead curators with flaming eyes jump into the air with surprise... Okay, I'm going to assume that you've never seen a group of undead curators with flaming eyes jump into the air with surprise. Suffice it to say that the experience was quite amusing.
in a creepy sort of way.
"He speaks our language," one hissed. "Impossible," another said. "Nobody outside the library knows it." "Could he be Therandes?" "He would have died millennia ago."
Bastille and Kaz were watching me. I winked at them.
"Translator's lenses," one of the curators suddenly hissed. "See?" "Impossible," another said. "Nobody could have gathered the sands of Rashid." "But he has," said a third. "Yes, they must be lenses of Rashid."
The three ghosts looked even more amazed than they had before.
"What's happening?" Bastille whispered. "I'll tell you in a minute."
Based on the curator's own rules, there was one way to discover if my father really had come to the Library of Alexandria and given up his soul. "I am the son of Attica Smedri," I said to the group of creatures. "I've come here for his personal effects. Your own laws say you must provide them to me." There was a moment of silence.
"We cannot," one of the curators finally said.
I sighed in relief. If my father had come to the library, then he hadn't given up his soul. The curators didn't have his personal items.
"We cannot," the curator continued,
skull teeth beginning to twist upward in an evil smile,
"because we have already given them away."
I felt a stab of shock.
"No, it can't be."
"I don't believe you," I whispered.
"We cannot lie," another said. "Your father came to us, and he sold his soul to us. He only wanted 3 minutes to read the book, and then he was taken to become one of us. His personal items have already been claimed. Someone did so this very day."
"Who?" I demanded. "Who claimed them? My grandfather?"
"No," the curator said, smile deepening. "They were claimed by Shasta Smedri, your mother."